Welcome to the Empire Builders Podcast, teaching business owners the not-so-secret techniques that took famous businesses from mom and pop to major brands. Stephen Semple is a marketing consultant, story collector, and storyteller. I'm Stephen's sidekick and business partner, Dave Young. Before we get into today's episode, a word from our sponsor, which is, well, it's us. But we're highlighting ads we've written and produced for our clients. So here's one of those.
I'm Sir Richard Poshingham from Poshingham's Extra Fine Jewelry with free coffee for your butler.
Hey there, Sir Richard.
Mark Tapper. I understand you're looking for some old domestic motor car for your father.
A 76 Cutlass, like the one Howard sold to start the first Tapper's jewelry store.
And you want to find one.
Well, keep this quiet. Howard doesn't listen to this radio station.
Won't tell a soul.
With the help of some very caring listeners, I was able to find one that's the same make, model, year, and color. It's virtually identical.
No upgrades? Touchscreens?
Completely original.
Well, you did the best you could.
I just need to find the perfect way to give it to him.
40-year-old automobile, just what every father wants.
Wait, he loved that car.
Loved it enough to unload it the first chance he got.
You wouldn't understand.
Tappers, tell us your story.
Can you think of a fun way to give Howard his gift? Drop me a line and be part of our story at tappers.com.
Welcome to the Empire Builders Podcast. Dave Young here, along with Stephen Semple, and we're sharing stories about empires, business empires, brands that were built and grew really big, and figuring out what they did to make them grow really big. And Stephen just mentioned today's topic, whispered it in my ear as the recorder was counting down. And you said that I probably haven't seen this in a while, but I feel like it's maybe still around, but it's Heyer's Root Beer.
Heyer's Root Beer.
Yes. Heyer's Root Beer. And I mean, I was kind of a root beer snob when I was a kid.
Oh,
not so
you?
Much anymore, right? But like I would, like I knew the difference between Heyer's and Dad's and A&W and, you know, all the big root beer brands.
Which was your favorite?
There was nothing that compared to an A&W root beer coming out of a fountain, not a can, like going to A&W and having a root beer in a giant glass cold mug. But we're here to talk about Heyer's Root Beer.
Yeah, which is now owned by A&W. I do not believe that Heyer's is still available in the U.S. You can get it still in Canada. But at one point, they were the largest in the United States. And Heyer's is actually kind of the inventor of the root beer business. And today is like 600 million a year of root beer.
Wow.
Sold. So I
That's
thought
a lot of root beer.
I thought it was worth exploring because this is the origin of root beer. So It's the early 1870s, and the population in the United States is booming due to massive immigration. And sanitation is becoming a huge problem in cities. Polluted water is spreading disease, and people frankly turn to alcohol for safe drinking. The average American at that time was consuming 7 gallons of alcohol a year, primarily beer and things along that lines, but part of it was because of water. So in 1874, protests start around alcohol. The anti-alcohol movements start. But the challenge is there's no good alternative to water. And so Charles Heyer's is a pharmacist, and he was always had these little side hustles and was always looking for opportunities. And while he's on his honeymoon, he's served this beverage called root tea. And it's made by fermenting, so it's carbonated, but the fermentation is cut off before alcohol forms. And it's really popular in these rural areas, but not in urban areas. And he's a member of the temperance movement, so he knew it was hard to find good alternatives to alcohol. So he starts to experiment on recipes for root tea. And he felt this could be a temperance drink because it had the feeling of a beer and it could be sold, you know, sold in stores, and it was delicious. And he felt he could create a shelf stable version. The first version of it was this powdered mix that you would boil, add water, add sugar, add yeast, let it ferment, cut it short, and there it would be, right? And so he met with this local Reverend Russell Carmwell, and he was sharing with him this idea of this root tea. And what the good Reverend said to him is, men here do not drink tea.
Mm.
So he looked at it and says, it looks like a beer. It's brewed like a beer. So let's call it a beer. Let's call it root beer.
Honestly, as a little kid, that was part of the allure.
Right.
Right? I'm drinking beer. It's root beer. Look at me.
Yeah. And it's this whole idea, when you have something that's unfamiliar, if you can attach the familiar to the unfamiliar, it actually really works. So he took the familiar beer, attached it to an unfamiliar root tea, made it root beer. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Now, it's the Centennial Fair of 1874 comes to his hometown of Philadelphia. And Centennial Fairs at these times were just huge. Like 10 million people came over a six-month period of money. And he spent all of his cash to debut this product. There were 14,000 businesses on display at this fair.
Where?
Philadelphia.
Holy
1876.
Moly.
Yeah. And if you think about it, Philadelphia in the early stages of the United States was a very important city. You know, that's where the Constitutional Square is there and all that other stuff, right? So the first telephone and typewriter debut there, it's very exciting. And he gives away free samples of his powder. It's packaged in these little packages with directions how to make it home. Mm-hmm. And when people try it, they really like it, but they don't like the powder. Like, he only sells like 864 packets in the entire fair. So he's got no money, no customers, and he's stuck with a lot of product. So it's 1877. In a last-ditch effort, he gambles everything, and he advertises on credit. And advertising a drink in mass media had never been done before.
Oh,
and the
wow.
market,
okay.
The market just didn't exist. So he posts these ads in local newspapers. It's the healthy, moral alternative. And he talks about the healthy benefits. It's so healthy, it's good for you. And orders slowly start to come in. And he was able to pay off his debt, and he was able to build some popularity in Philadelphia. And because it's a powder, it actually starts becoming national. And it really is considered kind of one of the first national drink brands.
I mean, way easier to ship powder than bottles.
Yeah. So he goes from 11,000 packs a year, eventually grows to 1.5 million packs, and then sales flatline. And he wonders, why did it flatline? And what did it was the soda fountain comes in.
Mm.
And I don't know if you realize this, but the first soda fountains were actually in pharmacies, and they sold all sorts of bad stuff. Heroin, cocaine, all sorts of crap was put into these early soda fountains. And really, they became the social replacement for the saloon, the soda fountains in pharmacies. And it was also around this time that the drinking straw was invented. But Hyers notices this trend. What he needs is a soda fountain recipe. So he needs a syrup that's pre-sweetened and ready to use. So he puts that together. But before he launches it nationally, he tests it out with a couple of local soda fountains. And it's not being done right. There's no consistency. And so he says, you know what? I got to fix that. So he develops his own machine to dispense it. And
it's
this white marble with silver pipes. And it's really the precursor to these branded soda machines of today. Because before that, the soda fountain guy would do all the mixing. This new soda fountain machine basically did the mixing.
Took that out of his hands. Yeah.
Took it out of his hands, and he branded it. And he sells like 1,000 of these machines. And he wanted the trademark root beer. But he wasn't able to trademark root beer. So he decided to change the name of the product. So up to this point, it was marketed root beer, root beer, root beer. So he changed the name to Hyers Root Beer.
Okay.
And frankly, this revolutionized how things were named. Like, products were not named that way. It was always just the product name, rather than attaching his name to the product. He was one of the first to do that. And so he becomes number one in the United States. And he starts then wanting to bottle his own product and shift that. And it becomes a bit of a challenge. But he discovers the bottle cap. And he's one of the first to use a bottle cap. So there's all sorts of things that happen. But then he hits a really funny moment. Well, funny to me, not funny to him.
Stay tuned. We're going to wrap up this story and tell you how to apply this lesson to your business right after this.
Hey, Rick, do you ever feel like,
yeah, I do.
Spinning my wheels, getting no traction.
I was going to say, like, we're part of a computer simulation, you know, like the Matrix.
Oh, I guess.
Your business still isn't growing, huh?
Nope.
Working harder, spending more. Going down rabbit holes, but not growing.
Exactly. Going through the motions. like Neo at the beginning.
Well, you could talk to the host.
The guy on this podcast?
Sounds like he's figured out all the secrets for growth.
I mean, these stories are interesting.
It doesn't cost anything to talk to him.
That's true. Maybe I should get plugged in.
Come on, do it. I want to hear what your ads sound like when they play at the beginning of this podcast.
When you say stuff like that, it does sound like we're in the Matrix.
Watch this. Take the blue pill, Dave!
Let's pick up our story where we left off, and trust me, you haven't missed a thing.
The Women's Christian Temperance Movement boycotts his product because the term beer bites him in the ass. They go, this is a beer, and it's fermented, so it should be boycotted.
Probably made it more popular.
No, it actually created a problem for him. It did hurt him.
Okay.
But here's what he did that was really smart. So remember how he attached the familiar to the unfamiliar?
Sure, yeah.
Root tea became root beer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he decided to pick bread and did a study on bread because bread is fermented. How much alcohol is in bread? Well, what he found was he had basically no more alcohol in his root beer than was in bread. So instead of saying to people, hey, it only has this much alcohol in it, which no one would understand, mm-hmm. he was then able to say it has the same amount of alcohol in it as baked bread.
Some people go, wait a minute, baked bread has alcohol in it?
Silenced it.
Yeah, you can't get drunk on bread.
Right, but again, attached it to something familiar and accepted. Didn't just do, I'm going to educate people.
Yeah.
Attached it to something that they could touch and feel and understand. By 1894, they're like selling 15 million gallons of root beer. They're doing great. And in the 1960, the Hires family sells the company to Consolidated Foods, and it changes hands a bunch of times, and it's not really what it used to be. But it is the birth of root beer. The birth of root beer is Hires root beer. So I thought that that was really interesting. But to me, the thing that I thought that was two really interesting things. One is the standardization, like how we recognize if I send this syrup out, it's not all being done right. So before I send it out, what I need to do is I need to create a way to ensure standardization. And what he understood is it wasn't going to be training. So he created a machine for it, which also created a branding opportunity because they had the Hires logo on the machine. So anytime you went into one of these places, you saw the Hires logo. But the whole idea of if I've got to sell people on an idea, making it simple, attaching it to something they already know and are familiar with, you know, really reduces that resistance to the ideas. And he did it twice. So it wasn't an accident. He did it twice.
Yeah. I love the story. And I love tying it to the amount of alcohol in a loaf of bread. The brilliance of it just goes a couple levels deep, right? It makes people stop and go, wait a minute, alcohol in bread? I never thought about that. Yeah, there's yeast that's fermenting. I guess that's how that works. And I suppose in a laboratory, you take a freshly baked loaf of bread, all those little bubbles that form the basis of bread have probably carbon dioxide and a little bit of alcohol in them.
Yeah, tiny trace amounts.
But that's why probably why bread just has this nice aroma. It's being carried aloft by alcohol molecules.
Well, and when you go into a distillery,
you smell bread. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, you do.
Yeah. Because it's the action of the yeast going on. It's eating a liquid instead of a paste of dough.
And he could have done what so many others would have done. Here's the level of alcohol in it. And then he would have lost at that moment because their claim was there's alcohol in root beer.
Yeah.
And they go, well, yeah, there is, but it's only at this level and it won't get you. Trust me, it's very tiny. He would have lost that argument. Mm-hmm. His brilliance was same amount as what's in bread.
Yeah. There's all these memes about how the United States will use anything to measure something besides the metric system. right? We will not tell you how many meters long something is. We'll tell you, you know, that it's the length of 60 trash cans or 190 root beer bottles, right? So how much alcohol is in it? Well, it's got less than a teaspoon. Well, we're not interested in that. How about comparing it to a loaf of bread? Oh, less than that. All right, we'll drink it.
But it makes it simple. Mm-hmm. It makes it concrete. It makes it familiar.
Yes.
It's also an unusual comparison, so it made it interesting and people would pay attention to it. What I'm saying is anytime we've got something where we're trying to educate the consumer on it, I have this new product, the more we can find something that is simple and concrete, the easier it is for somebody to get their head around, even if it's not exact. Because a lot of times people go, well, that's not close enough that I now get the idea.
Yeah.
And when things are complex, that becomes really important if we want somebody to embrace the thing that we're trying to convey.
And there was zero chance that the temperance movement was going to start lumping in baked bread on their list of
things
that they wanted to ban. Right.
Correct.
I'm sorry, I don't think we can get people to stop eating bread.
And we're not going to, and that's ridiculous. But it was that moment where all of a sudden it went away. The argument went away. And the other part that makes it also interesting in terms of he wasn't arguing at them saying, you're wrong, there's no alcohol in it. They were factually correct.
Yes.
There's alcohol in it. Yes, there is. Same amount as in baked bread.
Yeah.
Argument over.
I'm glad that it worked out for him.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would not have had my childhood moments of getting a frosty A&W root beer mustache on my face as I drank it out of an ice cold mug the size of my head.
It's all thanks to Heyer's root beer.
All delivered by a young girl and set on a tray on the window of my dad's car as it was rolled partway down. It was an amazing experience. Yeah.
You have Heyer's to thank for all of it.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing this story, Stephen. That was fun.
All right. Thanks, David.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please share us. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app and leave us a big, fat, juicy 5-star rating and review. And if you have any questions about this or any other podcast episode, email to questions@theempirebuilderspodcast.com.